Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. In 1956, the U.S. adopted an official national motto, In God We Trust. A recent Harris Institute poll, however, found that about a fourth of Americans identify as not at all religious, and another fraction of those call themselves atheists. Today on the show, we're talking about what it means to identify as an atheist in the United States, to embrace morality without buying the religious faith that prevails as well. Coming up, we'll hear from the founder of a so-called atheist church, one of the first in the U.S. in Los Angeles. Joining us now to talk about how the number of Americans who identify as atheists has increased is Dale McGowan, author of many books, including Raising Freethinkers and Atheism for Dummies. He joins us by phone from Atlanta. Welcome to the show, Dale.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
You wrote Atheism for Dummies. I suppose someone had to, right? But defining atheism can get tricky. How do you define it?
Atheism is very simply the absence of belief in a god or gods. So it's really, the definition is fairly simple, but the usage gets very complicated. People ascribe to it various things that aren't necessarily the case. The important part of the definition is that all it talks about is the absence of a belief, of a particular belief. It doesn't necessarily then mean that you are certain about that. It doesn't mean that you don't have any other beliefs. There are all sorts of things that are also possible. But the definition itself is very simply the absence of belief in a god or gods.
Yeah, that idea of that it doesn't mean that you're not positive, that you it
right.
doesn't mean you're not sure. That seems to be where there's some wiggle room. Sometimes people
yeah.
think, well, that's agnostic.
Well, exactly. And the fact is, it is agnostic. One of the problems is that people think that agnostic and atheist are mutually exclusive. Atheism is actually an opinion. Agnosticism is the position that, frankly, I think we're all in. None of us know for sure whether God exists or not. And I have, frankly, never met an atheist who was not also an agnostic. Richard Dawkins says that he's also an agnostic. He cannot say, I am definitively 100% sure that God doesn't exist. But he says, as I do, that I'm agnostic about God in the same way that I'm agnostic about Zeus or the Easter Bunny. I can't definitively prove that either of them don't exist, but it's my strong conviction that they don't.
Okay, and for folks who don't know, Richard Dawkins, of course, Oxford professor, author of the 2006 book, The God Delusion, among, you know, well-known
right.
for his views. I've read a bit about a growing movement of spiritual but not religious people. Are we considering them atheists?
Well, if they consider themselves atheists, yes. There
okay.
are some people who call themselves spiritual but not religious, but still have a belief in some sort of universal force. Some people might say, I'm not religious, but I believe in God. The definitions are all over the map. I think the important thing is to believe a person when they say what they are, you know, whatever label that they want to claim, to not put one on someone that they haven't chosen themselves.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about atheism and the organization of atheism in some places. Right now with Dale McGowan, he's the author of many books, including Raising Freethinkers and Atheism for Dummies. If you have a question or a comment, we'll take your calls, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org, or check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. So, assuming what you say, then, that it has a lot to do with how people define themselves. If they say they're an atheist, they're an atheist.
Yes, absolutely.
So, how many would you say fit that bill?
Well, that's where it gets interesting, because some people are atheistic by the definition without wanting to claim the label. They'll call themselves something else. The number of people who are non-religious, who are unaffiliated with a religious label, that's 19.6%, so about 1 in 5 Americans. But 2/3 of those say that they actually do believe in God. So they're not religious, not affiliated with a particular label, but they do believe in God. So that's where the complexity starts with these designations. The percentage of people who actually say, I am an atheist, is somewhere around 5%. And that is the same as Saudi Arabia in terms of the percentage of atheists. Now, the interesting thing is some people will say, for example, I'm a Unitarian, and a very large percentage of Unitarians don't believe in God, but they are counted among the religious for survey purposes. Some other people will be Jewish, but they're actually humanistic Jews. They don't believe in God, but they embrace cultural Judaism. So they might be an atheist, but they're counted as religious. That continues through a lot of different denominations and an increasing number of them. So it's very, very difficult to get a handle on it unless you talk to a person and say, what is it you actually hold true? What is it you actually believe?
So are some of the dummies out there, the people that are doing these surveys, they need to be more sophisticated in how they ask the questions?
Well, they're getting much better, but I think the one of the categories that's really least helpful is the nones, and N-O-N-E-S. That's when someone is asked what their religion is, they check the box none. And you would think that that means somebody is an atheist or someone is, you know, completely non-religious. But I actually have a friend who believes in God, believes that Jesus is his son, prays, goes to church, has psalm texts painted in her living room, but says that she is not religious. So, and again, that's perfectly fine for her to say that. But it does make it very, very difficult when we have a survey category that includes me and includes her.
I guess,
you know, it's hard to really say anything definitive there.
Well, the way you describe her, though, it's hard for me not to argue that she is religious. What do we mean by religious then?
Well, exactly. That's, I think, by the definition that you and I would usually use, she's definitely religious. But I'm a firm advocate for letting people find their way through these terms. She's thought about it very carefully, and she's decided that her belief is separate from religion, that she has belief, but it's not necessary. She sees religion as the organized labels and people getting together and under a shared set of doctrines. And so she wants to say, I'm not religious, and to still have those beliefs. Now, there's also a flip side that can be very confusing, which is people who attend Unitarian fellowships or attend ethical societies and call themselves religious congregations, even though the vast majority of people in, certainly in the ethical societies and also in UUs, a large percentage, are completely non-theistic. But they call themselves religious because they're coming together in these congregational communities. So it's the whole thing is a terminological mess that you just sort of have to embrace. You have to say, you know what, let people find their own way in this. Let them find something they're comfortable with.
Are these numbers of non-believers that, at least for the sake of discussion today, that fall into these broader categories, are they very different from what they were, say, 30 or 50 years ago? Have the numbers changed much?
Oh, definitely. The numbers have changed dramatically. If you look at the unaffiliated number, that's the one that's most easily tracked, even though it's messy. So in 1990, 8% of people identified as non-religious. 2012 was the reading, I think, where you get the 19.6. So it has more than doubled in a generation, is one way to look at it. People are much more comfortable. This is the thing. I'm not sure that represents a doubling of religious disbelief. I think it might represent a doubling of people's comfort, their willingness to say to a pollster, yes, I'm non-religious.
And also, it seems to me, and this is just anecdotal, that I meet a lot more people who are spiritual. They consider themselves spiritual, or but they aren't part of an organized religion.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I think what people are saying with that, a completely valid thing, that they want to embrace the sort of transcendent aspects of it that, that don't necessarily have any supernatural component whatsoever, but we live in the everyday world, you know, day after day, we go to work, we come home, we eat dinner, and so on. And it's nice to transcend that everyday experience once in a while and sort of feel life on a different level, a deeper meaning, and so on. Some people get it through meditation. Some people get it through a walk in the woods. Some get it through prayer. There doesn't have to be any supernatural component to say that I'm sort of lifting myself up out of the everyday experience and trying to see the larger picture. I think that's what people are embracing with that label.
And for some people, that transcendent aspect or that transcendent experience is gathering with other people.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, this is one thing that one reason that I think the idea of these churches that don't necessarily have a theistic component, a religious component, are very interesting. It's starting to recognize what church really does. There was a terrific study in 2010, Harvard and University of Wisconsin study, that looked at the happiness of churchgoers. This is a well-established thing. The people who go to church are happier. They score higher in life satisfaction measures than people who don't. But they dug a little deeper in this, and they found that that is only true when the person in question has good friends in the congregation. If somebody goes to church on a regular basis and has no friends in the congregation, they actually score lower in life satisfaction than somebody who stays home every Sunday. So that's when the researchers began to zero in on the social aspect of church and recognize that, the way one of the researchers put it, is that the life satisfaction boost you get from going to church and gathering in this way is almost completely social. He said it has to do with getting together on a regular basis with people that you know and are connected to in a meaningful way and doing something meaningful. Now, that's something that can happen in a theistic religious context, but it can also happen entirely outside of that context. It is a human need to gather together and do something meaningful and have that experience. So it's really nice to see that people are exploring various ways to do this that don't necessarily rely on religious belief.
We were talking earlier about the percentages. It's doubled. Non-religious numbers have doubled since 1990 from 8% to 19%.
Right.
What do we know about where atheists or non-believers or non-religious people are coming from, because our culture is so steeped in religion? Most of them weren't raised non-religious, were they?
Oh, no, absolutely not. Some were, but the vast majority mm-hmm. were raised religious. Many of them were religious into their adult life and then left on their own. The Pew Forum actually did a fascinating study on this, religion switching study, Faith in Flux, I think was the name of it. This was about 5 years ago. Pew switching, if you will. But one of the things that they discovered is they looked at which denominations go where. So if people are switching religion, are they going from Catholicism to Protestantism, from Protestantism to an Eastern religion, all these various things?
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out that the largest percentage of the non-religious, the largest percentage comes from Catholicism. Mm-hmm. Something like 25% was the largest contribution to those who become completely non-religious were originally Catholic. So they are coming from established religions, and some more than others.
And that fits with the Catholic Church's, I mean, the reporting, we know the Catholic Church is losing people, congregants.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Well, actually, they are. And that's the same with all mainline churches across the United States. The only exception is evangelical Protestant denominations. That is a growing sector. But everything else across the board is losing congregants rapidly.
Pew Research, this may be the same report. Well, this one was about Judaism and found that 22% of the adult Jewish population consider themselves Jews of no religion. And
right.
I hear that same sort of thing about Catholics. I'm Catholic, but I'm not religious, but I'm Catholic.
Yeah.
I'm Jewish,
right.
But I'm not religious, but I'm Jewish.
Well, exactly. That's what they're doing, is embracing the cultural aspects and the family aspects and the identity of it without the theistic aspect. You know, one of the most fascinating illustrations of that in terms of Catholicism is actually in Canada, the province of Quebec, which was founded by the French. And it was originally the law was that only Catholics could settle there. So as late as about 30 years ago, 30 or 40 years ago, 83% of people in Quebec identified as Catholic, and it was the most religious province in the country. But in the course of a little over a generation, Quebec became the least religious in the country. Church attendance is the lowest in the country, and all other aspects of religious practice. However, 83% still call themselves Catholic.
Hmm.
So it's a matter of identity and culture, even though the individuals will say, I don't believe in God, but I'm still Catholic because that's part of who I am. That's part of my identity.
My guest is Dale McGowan. He's author of many books, including Raising Free Thinkers and Atheism for Dummies. We're talking about atheism today and what it means in our largely religious society or religiously oriented society, what it means to be part of this minority group. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Coming up, we're going to hear from a founder of, for lack of a better term, an atheist church in Los Angeles. So you can look forward to that and more when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking today about atheism in the United States and how non-believers live moral lives in a country where religion, morality, and citizenship seem inextricably linked. In fact, in 1937, Gallup started asking Americans if they would vote for a member of a particular underrepresented group. Today, some 90% of respondents said they vote for Catholics and Jews, but just 54% would vote for an atheist. Still with us discussing atheism in the U.S. is Dale McGowan, author of Atheism for Dummies. And joining us now by phone from Washington, D.C. area is John Shook, author of The God Debates, A Guide for Atheists and Believers and Everyone in Between. Welcome to the show, John Shook.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
John, why do you think it's so hard to be a public figure and an atheist in the United States?
Well, we're aware that there are various kinds of prejudices against people who don't conform to majority opinion or large important social institutions. And deviation away from religion is one of those manifestations that can be measured in Europe, although religiosity is less important in Europe. In America, though, there's a reason why many people still call it a Christian nation, even though belief in traditional Christianity has been dropping, as Dr. McGowan has been very carefully outlined. We know that culturally, Christianity has still a very powerful influence. And people who publicly deviate and dissent, there are going to be social repercussions. And politicians know this most of all.
He never ran for office, but a lot of great social leaders like Dr. Martin Luther King are deeply religious. Do you think that the influence of people like him have affected that at all? The public's?
Well, I think America's story is a very special story where many different kinds of people from different religions, free-thinking movements, some even non-religious, have made important contributions. I mean, we're looking at nearly 300 years of American history from colonial times. Thomas Jefferson wasn't a traditional Christian by any means, sometimes a deist, later in life probably just a materialist. There were atheists who held very high important positions in the civil rights movement, going back to the Harlem Renaissance in the 20s and 30s. There were atheists marching alongside Dr. King, not publicized, but very active and important as well. Several of the important suffragette leaders back in the late 1800s, Elizabeth Cady Stanton and so forth, were non-believers. Even though they may not have been able to publicize their non-belief, they were still powerfully motivated by the same high ideals, American values, that spiritual leaders have. And I think that's the kind of common ground that has made America, to the degree that it has been a great country, worthy. And I think we can be proud of those ideals rather than worrying about which God or if any God is being worshipped along the way.
Zane in Columbus, you have a question along these lines. Welcome to the show, Zane.
Hi.
Hi.
I was wondering what atheists could do and could bring to the table within our government.
So if someone held office, because of course there's people in government that are atheists, but you're talking about elected to government.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Dale McGowan, do you think they bring anything different to the table?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's not necessarily something that religious people don't bring, but atheists bring the same sense of patriotism, the same sense of evidence-based thinking that some religious people have. The idea is what is the framework that somebody has. And when you have somebody in a government situation, I'm getting a bad echo through the phone that's making it hard for me to.
Okay, sorry about
that. But I'll try to continue.
You sound fine. You sound fine on the air.
Okay, mm-hmm. Not in my head though. the fact is that atheists bring a humanistic perspective to the table, which is that we have no one to rely on except ourselves, human beings. We don't have a supernatural force to appeal to. And as a result, there's this tremendous sense of mutual care and responsibility that kicks in. And when you are dealing with somebody in that position, they don't do what a lot of people assume, which is just fall into moral hedonism. The tendency is to instead say, we have to lift each other up. We have to support each other. And that's what people, when they get into positions of responsibility with a naturalistic or atheistic point of view, tend to do.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about atheism this hour, and in particular, how atheism, how it's changed, how people view themselves as atheists, and what it means for our society going forward, and how some people have put together organizations of atheists that go by different names. We're going to hear from Ian Dodd, co-founder of the Sunday Assembly of Los Angeles. Coming up, if you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513. And Tom in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. I just don't know. I don't really believe in the religious aspect. If other people do, that's fine. Whatever gets them by is cool.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder, am I crazy because of what I do believe? I do believe in a type of universal intelligence. I don't want to call it God, so am I agnostic, atheist? I don't know.
Okay, well, let's see what the experts say. Thanks a lot.
That's okay.
Okay. I'm taking people off quickly because the phones do sound kind of funny, but what about that, John Shook? What do you have to tell Tom about that?
Oh, he should not feel alone. Great question, Tom. You have a lot of company. When polling asks, do you believe in God or a universal spirit? The reason why they had to add universal spirit a couple of decades ago was precisely because so many people in or out of church were very doubtful about a supernatural God out beyond our created universe, but they still felt emotionally or sensed or found plausible the idea of some sort of cosmic sentience, some sort of cosmic intelligence. They felt a connection to it in various sorts of ways. There's a lot of religious diversity covered, papered over by just the label of spiritual. And I think we're finding out that Americans, just like people all around the world, are capable of having various kinds of emotional connections with nature and what they perceive out there in nature to perhaps be kindly looking upon us, not performing miracles perhaps or doing things that ancient scriptures say, but perhaps gently guiding the universe along. And these are very ancient ideas. There's nothing terribly new about them. Many religions have sprung out of these perhaps more basic spiritual intuitions. And many people who call themselves atheists because they deny any supernatural God and they disagree with religions about the supernatural, still feel comfortable in talking in this way, this spiritual language about some sort of cosmic mind or emotional resonance that they think that they connect into through mystical or spiritual methods. Very common, and I think people are realizing that it's quite acceptable to say, I'm spiritual but not religious.
Dale McGowan, thinking about that in terms of the churches themselves, the organized religions starting to soften the edges and accept more that well, the spirit idea, it makes me wonder if some of the churches themselves have not driven away people but have helped people leave the organized church.
Oh, well, there's no doubt about that, that some of them have, and some of them have adjusted instead. One of the most powerful ways you register this is with the millennial generation, those who are young now, roughly 18 to 26. When they talk about traditional church, they talk about it in very negative terms very often. They think that it is divisive and judgmental and homophobic and so on. And churches that have not adjusted to that are losing members in droves. And those who have instead adjusted and become more welcoming and tolerant and progressive, which many of them have, find that people are much more comfortable being part of them because they're on the right side of history. So there's been some very intelligent adjustment going on in some of the denominations.
Let's talk about how people are raising their children and how one raises a child when they are an atheist. Dale, you've written a lot about atheism and parenting. Why the focus on raising non-religious kids? How does it differ from people who are working out how to raise a child in a church?
Right. Well, one of the things that I'm careful to say is I'm not exactly raising a non-religious child.
Okay.
I'm raising a child in a non-religious home.
Okay.
So we don't have religious practices and so on, but one of the things I'm very careful about, and that the vast majority of atheist parents are also careful about, is that we don't want to indoctrinate kids into our own point of view either. One of the things that's most satisfying about my worldview to me is that I came to it myself, that it was really something that I was in charge of the process. No one pushed anything in particular on me. I was allowed to think independently. And I want my kids to have that same outcome and that same control, that same autonomy. So what you do is, my wife was Christian when we got married. She was a Southern Baptist. She was, for the first 13 years of our marriage, she identified as a Christian. And we were very careful to say when our kids would ask questions about God or religion, I would say what I think, you know, here's what I think, and I said, be sure you talk to Mom because she thinks differently, and you get to make up your own mind, and you can change your mind as often as you want, and we will love you no less no matter what you decide. So that's something that religious or non-religious parents can do equally, and it, you end up with kids who are very confident in their point of view and very relaxed and kind of in control of the way they see the world. It's really a lovely thing.
John Shook, is this something you get at in your guide?
In my book, I do try to emphasize that there are wide diversity of opinions and arguments and debates about God have been going on for centuries and millennia. I think that's a good thing. I think educated people who want learning and exploration must agree that this is a good thing. It's not about the conclusion. It's about whether or not we're learning from each other along the way. And I think the world's diverse religions and the diversity that I've been trying to point at among people who are non-religious, but perhaps spiritual, there's plenty that we can learn from each other. I think the dangers of religion come from their tendency to make people feel like they're authorized to indoctrinate children, perhaps, try to indoctrinate others. They want the religious right to dominate somebody else using their own religion. That's not an authentic American freedom. An authentic American freedom is to think, have your own conscience, and control your own life. But nowadays, in America's culture wars, we're looking at a phenomenon where there are denominations trying, under the cover of religious liberty, to actually religiously dominate others and try to control what others can do using their own personal religion. And I think perhaps they just haven't put enough thought into it themselves. They certainly wouldn't want that done to them if someone else had dominating powers. So I think the more that we can share our perspectives and realize that there's so much we don't know about the universe, I think the better off we'd all be.
John Shook, are these days of the culture wars good days for atheists or nonbelievers, or not?
I think it's a double-edged sword.
Okay.
I do think that we should all realize that we know atheists. It's not part of the definition of atheism, as Dr. McGowan eloquently explained, that you have to proclaim that you're certain there is no God. A handful of atheists will do this. We all know atheists because they quietly just have the personal opinion that they doubt any gods exist. They may not be loud and proud about it, but I do think that there is prejudice and stereotyping going on, and that's part of the culture wars. So religious denominations that want to increase control over government, they have a great incentive to try simultaneously to make it sound like there are lots of these very scary atheists who are coming to take over your schools and your local governments. And on the other hand, they love any polling that will reassure them and say that the actual numbers are very, very small, because they don't want to frighten the people still in their own pews. They don't want the story to get out that non-belief is growing and growing fast in America. Well, they can't have it both ways, but hypocrisy is a regular feature of the culture wars. For secular people who simply want to strengthen separation of church and state, who want to prevent religious domination on themselves and on all Americans, I think that the number of people who can stand up and say, we are part of America's pluralistic story too, they should be heard. And I think they are starting to be politically heard more and more.
I want to ask a question for Tom from Marion because of the phone problem. Tom, thanks for your call. I'm going to ask them before we let John Shook go. And that is, has development of science affected the percentage of atheists? Dale McGowan?
Oh, well, it's definitely true. One of the things that has been most influential, and the reason it's so controversial, is the theory of evolution by natural selection. I've often said, if I were alive 300 years ago or 200 years ago, I would almost certainly have been a traditional Christian believer of some sort, because the idea that the universe is designed is a very compelling illusion. It's something that is really very easy to believe, and we didn't yet have an understanding, an alternative explanation other than this creative intelligence. Until evolution by natural selection came along, and it was wedded with genetics, and we understood what the mechanism was, and we see that this amazing illusion of design is something that happens entirely naturally. We came to understand through science how it actually occurs. That's something that Richard Dawkins put it very well when he said, evolution made it possible to be an intellectually fulfilled atheist, someone who could not only says, I don't think there's a God, but I have a very good idea how things work without that God, that we have really good alternative explanations. And that's what science has done as much as anything, is provide those explanations.
John Shook, any thoughts about that?
Oh, I agree entirely. And let me say, Dr. McGowan's recent book called Atheism for Dummies is for people more than just dummies. It is the single best volume that I have ever read on resources of the entire spectrum of non-belief, and most importantly, the affirmative convictions that, of course, non-believers have. Non-believers have plenty of affirmative values, principles, and convictions. They just don't happen to be dictated by any scriptures.
Well, John Shook, thanks so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me.
John Shook, he's the author of The God Debates, a guide for atheists and believers and everyone in between. And, of course, we'll have links to the books and organizations that we talk about on this show on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We'll be right back.
comes the sun, I say it's all right.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking today about atheism in the U.S. and how non-believers live moral lives in a country where religion, morality, and citizenship often seem inextricably linked. If you walked into a church on Sunday morning, you might expect to hear hymns played on the organ, not Beatles tunes like Here Comes the Sun, one of my personal favorites. But the Sunday Assembly group in Los Angeles is different. There's pop music, not hymns. No prayer book, and there's no God. Sunday Assembly was founded by two stand-up comedians in Britain who describe it this way.
It's part atheist church, part foot-stomping show, and 100% celebration of life.
After all, just because you're not religious doesn't mean that you don't want a place to go and think about improving yourself.
30 chapters have started around the world. It's part of a conversation we're having today about how non-believers live moral lives without religion. And we've been talking with Dale McGowan, author of Atheism for Dummies and Raising Free Thinkers. Dale, once again, thanks for joining us.
Oh, glad to be here.
And joining us now by phone from Southern California is Ian Dadd. He's co-founder of the Sunday Assembly of Los Angeles. Welcome, Ian.
Thank you. Good morning.
Some people, even one of the founders, as we just heard, are calling the Sunday Assembly an atheist church, but you're not crazy about either of those words.
Well, the phrase atheist church obviously gets us a lot of traction in the press. It's kind of low-hanging fruit, and I think it's been a handy way to get attention for ourselves as we get started. But actually, within the Sunday Assembly, we try not to emphasize that phrase too much. We get a lot of feedback or pushback, I should say, from a couple of different camps. The atheists don't like it because it resembles church, and religious people don't like it because it has atheism in it. And we're trying to reach out and be open to a broad swath of the community. And so, we refer to ourselves explicitly as a godless congregation. We don't have any legal status as a church. We don't emphasize the atheism part of it. We emphasize the celebration of life.
So you're not getting any tax breaks?
No, not at this point. we're just getting up and running. In the future, we probably will go ahead and file for 501c3 nonprofit status like any educational or humanitarian organization. But we'll be on equal footing with all of them.
Dale McGowan, how fast are these kind of organizations, these kinds of groups, congregations, assemblies catching on?
Oh, they're catching on very, very quickly. I think it's going to be a matter, as Ian said, it's going to be a matter of getting past the misconceptions initially, because the vast majority of people who share my worldview entirely, who are atheists, who are naturalistic, are not part of any sort of formal organization, any sort of, humanist or atheist group, but they sometimes miss what they had when they were religious and they were going to church. There's something there that they loved about coming together in community, about slowing down once a week and thinking about, improving themselves, improving their community, giving back to the world in this congregational setting. And one of the keys to helping people, I don't even think of it as helping atheists, this is about helping people. The millions of people who have left that very helpful human setting in the church are looking for something that fills that gap, that replaces that feeling that they had. And the extent to which we can meet those human needs without the things that people have left behind, without the God belief and so on, that's the extent to which we're going to be successful. And so I think there is a tremendous opportunity for meeting a very real, very keenly felt human need here.
Ian Dodd, what's a typical meeting of the Sunday Assembly like?
Well, a lot of people would look at it and say, gosh, that looks very much like a liberal religious celebration, worship service. Sunday Assembly Los Angeles, we start off by singing songs. You played, Here Comes the Sun. That's the way we started off our very first assembly last November. We sing pop songs. We follow it with a little poetry or inspirational reading. Then we have an inspirational speaker, somebody who would play the part of, the pulpit leader for us, it's going to be a neuroscientist. It's going to be a theoretical cosmologist. It's going to be a playwright. It's going to be somebody who can bring us something to wonder about. There will be a time for reflection, and there will be a time to break and socialize and get to know people and to get together to do community service projects. We put a big emphasis on creating projects between our monthly assemblies where we can go out and be of service to our larger community, like several of us did this last Monday on Martin Luther King. Went and helped out several other organizations with a big clothing drive.
It sounds like a TED Talk without, except for the community or, you know, community organizing and that kind of a thing. How does it differ from that?
Well, I would say you've already hit upon it. The big difference, having been to the TED Talks myself, the big difference is that we're really trying to build community, and we're trying to build community by creating, giving people opportunities to form bonds between each other, both at the social hour and with these events that we plan and organize in between the monthly assemblies. Because just to get to know people on a superficial basis, hey, hi, I saw you here last month. It was great having coffee with you. You know, we're looking for ways for people to find like-minded souls, if you'll excuse the word, and create those friendships that that religious people have had, you know, all along.
Rachel in Whitehall, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Rachel.
Hi, Ann. I just wanted to thank you so much for the show.
You're welcome.
And also, I'm a mother. I'm divorced. And my daughter's four, so she's starting to ask questions. And my ex-husband and I, let me go back for a second, kind of agreed to raise her non-religiously, non-indoctrinated her. But the other day she asked, she said, who made us? And I said, well, me and Daddy made you. And that's like a more naturalistic. And then she said, she's like, oh, what about God? God made us all, but Ryan. I was like, Mommy thinks God's pretend. And I'm just wondering if, and I did feel kind of defensive, not towards her, but just towards, I guess, my ex, if he's trying to raise her religiously. But I'm wondering if I kind of, you know, overdid it, but that's just what I told her.
Or bottom line, what do you say? And Dale McGowan, will go to you first, but Ian Dodd, I'm interested in how children are brought to the Sunday Assembly, too. But Dale McGowan, what's your advice for Rachel?
I really think what you did was absolutely perfect. What you can... there's the echo again.
Sorry.
If you start with your owning your own perspective, there's nothing in the world wrong with that. You say to your child, here's what I believe. You invite the child to seek out the opinions of other people. And if you have, know someone who is religious and can be trusted to share their opinion without indoctrinating, say, you know, go talk to grandma. I know that she thinks differently. And then you just add, in the end, it's your right to make up your own mind, and I will love you and support you no matter what you decide. These are the most interesting questions in the world. You know, that's the thing. I don't want to I didn't become an atheist because I found the idea of God uninteresting. I became an atheist because I found the question the most interesting question you can ask, number one. And so I want my kids to grapple with those same questions, but to do it honestly and openly and with a sense of wonder. So as a parent, I share my perspective, but then I invite them to seek other people out and make up their own minds.
Ian Dodd, what about children in the Sunday Assembly of Los Angeles?
Probably one of the most common questions we get from prospective attendees is it family friendly? And we emphasize that, yes, it is absolutely. We invite the children. On my organizing team, like our caller Rachel, I've got a single mom of three children. And through her and a couple of other key volunteers, we've started creating sort of a side club for the kids where they go, because they don't want to sit through the TED Talk kind of thing. We understand that. So we've got a space where the kids gather to do age-appropriate activities and have fun and explore these questions like what Dale is talking about.
We have an email comment from Avery. He says, I think the Sunday Assembly is a great thing because people need a community. For those who left the church, it provides something to fill that void. We have a great community of atheist groups in Central Ohio called the Columbus Coalition of Reason. It is a great close-knit community of like-minded people. I think that Avery left with us with a link to that group as well, and we'll post something for our listeners on our website at WOSU.org/all sides. It ultimately, well, you know, there was a recent schism in New York, in the New York chapter, where a member said the assembly has a quote-unquote problem with atheism. Is it a welcoming place for people who really want to disprove God's existence? Is it a welcoming place for people who are maybe still questioning? Ian Dodd?
I would say Sunday Assembly, at least in Los Angeles, is a welcoming place for those who are curious, who are questioning, who maybe identify as a nun. The whole question about New York came up, obviously. We talked about it all over the country. Those of us here in Los Angeles, we have friends on both sides of that quote-unquote schism. You know, that boiled down to a difference of opinion, whether or not one camp wanted to emphasize capital A, atheism, and the other group wanted to emphasize capital H, humanism. And, you know, here in Los Angeles, we take it as a starting premise that if you've come to us, you probably don't believe, or at least very close to it. We don't shy away from our non-belief. We don't deny that we're probably atheists or agnostics, but that's a starting premise. And so we just kind of move on from there.
Dale McGowan, are you surprised Oxford professor Richard Dawkins, who we referred to earlier, the author of the 2006 book, The God Delusion, said that organizing atheists is like herding cats? I guess there's some sense to that. What do you make of it?
Oh, absolutely. And it's that's a kind of an old standby in the community. It's true. One of the reasons is what I said earlier, which is that most atheists were not born into it. Most of them arrived at their position by thinking very carefully about the questions related to it. And that means you have a room full of people who have arrived as a result of independent thought, not as a sort of collective group gathering around an idea. That's going to be a harder group to corral together. And you know what? That is perfectly fine. I think what you do then is you embrace that. You say, we're not going to try to agree on everything. That's not a good thing. I don't think that having a room full of people who agree are required to agree on every single premise of belief, I don't think that's healthy. I think you allow people to find their own way, but you say, here's the foundation, here's the common principles around which we gather, you know, that people should be treated equally, that people should be allowed to pursue questions wherever they go, that we should help each other, you know, those very simple ideas. All the other stuff is up on the surface. We can talk about it and debate it, but it's those foundational principles that we can gather around as a community.
You know, Ian Dodd, when people go to church, they go and they listen and they're directed and guided. How often are people talking about why they're there and having conversations about being atheists or being non-believers?
Well, the conversations that we have, which usually happen around the coffee pot afterwards,
okay,
tend to be, gosh, I'm so glad I found this community. This is something I've been looking for all my life. We get a really interesting turnout here in L.A., and I think it probably holds across the country. We are getting a tremendous number of women and a tremendous number of non-Caucasians, particularly Hispanics and African Americans. And what those attendees tell us is that they have never felt particularly comfortable or welcome at what I call the sort of old school atheist and free thought organizations, which tend to be dominated by men and by older men, in fact. And now Sunday Assembly has come along, and for some reason we're striking a chord with that swath of the non-believer population that all of a sudden feels like they have a place that they are welcome.
Well, Ian Dodd, thank you so much for joining us and getting up early for us today to talk about it.
My pleasure.
Ian Dodd, he's the co-founder of the Sunday Assembly of Los Angeles. And Dale McGowan, thanks for joining us this hour. We really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Dale McGowan, author of many books, including Raising Free Thinkers and Atheism for Dummies. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.